Sega's Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
Hey everybody, this is Dom Vitale from the Arizona Pro Wrestling Training Center, and you're listening to the Vegas Bad Boys Podcast. You are in the right place, believe you me.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here along with Sin City Steve. And today, I gotta say, as much as I like to call it Matt Michaels' People I Don't Hate, we're gonna call this one Sin City Steve's People I Love. So, without any further anticipation and hype, I'm going to welcome Kevin Gill to the show. How you doing, Kevin?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks so much for having me on.
And I'm so glad that you could do this. And I'm going to turn it over to Steve, who's going to start the ball rolling right out the gate.
Awesome, Sin City Steve about to drop the question bombs.
That's right, man.
Please dispense with the bombing.
So, Kevin, you've always been involved with music and video games and pro wrestling and all the stuff that I personally love. I mean, you've had opportunities to be involved with numerous landmark video games, worked on one particular video game franchise that kind of got it all started, that would forever change the face of video gaming, in Grand Theft Auto. How did that opportunity with Rockstar Games come about? That time ago.
Oh, that's crazy, man. I've always been a big fan of video games, you know, and to me, video games were the final frontier of mystery, in that I went from being just a fan of it to then being someone who was running my own independent record label and putting on shows and putting out records and stuff like that. And to me, video games was still the, like, man, I never even met anybody that works in that industry. Like, how do you work in that industry? Like, you know what I mean? And just through a chance meeting between a friend of mine and someone who's very pivotal in video game history, they had met up socially. Just they bumped into each other and, you know, met each other at a bar in New York City back in the day. And it turns out, the guy my friend met just moved over to America to work for this new video game, or really to launch a new video game subsidiary that wasn't even named yet. Mm-hmm. So that guy's name was Sam Hauser, who, if you're like a video game historian or super ninja, he's the force behind Rockstar Games. Like, he's the guy. He doesn't really do interviews or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And basically through... My friend met him the same day my friend had been over my house playing Grand Theft Auto 1 all day, which had just come out, because that was like a super anticipated game to me. So then when they met, they were able to have a conversation about the game and blah, blah, blah. That led to me doing an interview with the guy from then unnamed company. And they hired me basically on the spot to work at this company that didn't have a name. And then maybe 4 or 5 months after I started working there, they came up with the name Rockstar Games. And nice. So it was like the earliest of early days. Like Grand Theft Auto 1 had just come out on console, and like ASC Games had done like the PC version. And there was this little video game company in New York City, Take-Two Interactive, and they launched or funded, however you want to look at it, a video game brand headed by Sam Hauser. And there was a couple other guys, obviously, and girls that were key to that whole operation. But that allowed me to leap from doing underground music and stuff to using all the same tactics, everything else that I had learned from music. I got to then literally apply all of it at Rockstar and then learn a bunch of different stuff. Like, then I got to be like writing and putting together TV commercials and just crazy anything that you showed an interest and interest in learning about, and you were the type of person who would deliver the goods, they would give you the ball to run with. So I was able to work on like just everything. It's crazy. But the TV, doing the first TV commercial, really stands out because the commercial starred Kevin Nash. And I got told on a Friday, like, the way it works in video games, like, you know, you get a budget kind of in advance, like you get a sales forecast on your game and you get a budget And then you carve out your budget into marketing and all the different forms of stuff you're going to do with the game. So from day one, when I was assigned this Monster Truck Madness game at Rockstar, one of the much lesser known Rockstar titles. But from the day I was assigned the game, it was like, you know, there is no television budget. This is not a mainstream thing. And it's like, yo, no problem. You know what I mean? So everything I did was lean, you know, lean and mean. Like, let's take advantage of the relationships and the trucks and all that. And there's WCW trucks in the game. Mm-hmm. So in the course of me trying to develop every relationship, you know, with the Bigfoot people and the Gravedigger people and the WCW people, of course, which I had, you know, my own vested interest in. But that led to WCW saying, hey, if you want, like, any of our guys for your TV commercial, you know, you could just have them for your TV commercial. And I'm like, damn, what the fuck? That's me. That's crazy. We could just have them? No money. Like, you, and you'll kind of broker it for us? Like, yo, let's do it.
That's so crazy.
I always remembered it was a Friday afternoon, and then the dude comes by my desk, and he's like, where are your television commercial concepts for Monster Truck Madness? Now, meanwhile, the whole time there's been no, it's 100% you're not doing TV. Don't even bring it up. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. So then they're like, where are your TV concepts? And I'm like, oh, they're almost done. Like, I'll show them to you on Monday. And then I just went home and made up a bunch of TV commercials ideas. And then we went to Atlanta and shot it at the, what do they call it? The power plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a commercial that, yeah, a lot of people saw. It ran, we sponsored, because I did the advertising buys and stuff. So we sponsored the early episodes of ECW on TNN,
yep,
brought to you by Monster Truck Madness. And it was just funny to me. Yeah, we got to do a commercial with Kevin Nash, and that's my really long Rockstar game story.
That's amazing, man.
And Kevin Nash has no recollection of any of it ever happening. Like, he's seen the commercial, you know what I mean? But he has no. But he was great to deal with. He was an absolute, once we got there and everything, to the shoot, it was fine.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, you've definitely kind of merged professional wrestling and music and video games like no one else that I can really think of offhand. Fast forward a couple of years. I mean, you also you worked on a particular game called 25 to Life, which now that game it had an amazing soundtrack that you put together. And I mean, it had a veritable who's who of the rap world, featuring Tupac, Public Enemy, the Ghetto Boys, DMX, E-40, Tech N9ne, Blaze Your Dead Homie. What was that process like, you know, putting together that soundtrack? You also directed some of the cinematics for that title as well.
Yeah, that was just a real wild experience. Like, in those days, I had moved on from Rockstar and was out in California, where I still am today. Then I was with a company called Eidos Interactive. And it's just interesting how stuff worked. So there was like kind of a rebellious development studio that was formed by kind of friends of Eidos and people. Some people we had worked with before formed the new company, sort of thing. And they had this wild idea. You know, at the time, SOCOM was like the biggest game that there was for console games, you know?
Yep.
And it was a pretty simple but revolutionary idea. Like, what about, you know, SOCOM is basically military agents versus terrorists, you know what I mean? Just on all different maps. So it was like, well, what if it was cops and robbers, so to speak? What if it was cops and robbers in the hood, or however you want to describe it?
Right.
was the basic concept. And it was like, well, to sell the whole thing, like, it needs a real soundtrack that would distinguish us from the other games, you know what I mean?
So
that was just a matter of, you have to politic and campaign to get a budget to work with, because that's half the battle. Most games, they'll have some corny budget that doesn't allow anything to be done. But then once you can carve out that budget and make it important, and you have to get its value, you have to, like, make sure it's across everything. Like, so PR has to be talking about it. It has to be on the package, you know. It has to be in the sales materials. Like, this way, every part of it, everyone knows, oh, this is this cool thing that's associated, You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Similar to what we did with Backyard Wrestling.
Yeah.
But it was just great. Like, just sitting down. In that case, the guys from the studio actually had, like, they had a lot of thoughts on music. You know what I mean? So we would all listen to stuff, and people would suggest tracks and stuff like that. And then you just have to go through the process of licensing them. And sometimes you want a track and people won't give it to you, or you want a track and people want to charge just so much money that it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't a Super Bowl commercial. You're one of 35 acts on a game. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
But yeah, so that was just wild. Really just good experiences. You know what I mean? KRS-One being on 25 to Life was a relationship that I brought over from him being on the Backyard Wrestling video game soundtrack. Yeah. Same with, and to mention Tech N9ne, like, you know, this is Tech N9ne in, like, I don't know, 2005 or something.
Right, exactly. So
it's way ahead of the curve on Tech N9ne. A little known footnote to that is Tech N9ne is actually an unlockable character that you can unlock and play Tech N9ne in that 25 to Life video game. That was part of the deal I worked out with Tech.
Oh, that's awesome, dude.
And to me, it's just tribute to the underground. You know what I mean? In every in every facet, like, yo, here's this game that's going to be misunderstood, and here's the soundtrack of reality. You know what I mean? And a lot of people get exposed to really good music.
Yeah.
In a case like that, you know, you've seen how influential the Tony Hawk soundtracks and stuff are, and those are obviously very, very, very good. There are some corny tracks in the mix too. You know what I mean? I feel like, if held to a higher standard, I feel like we kept it a little bit realer. But everyone has to do what they have to do, and everyone's trying to hit a different corner of the market. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So there's no doubt.
Speaking of, you know, your music background, what would you say was your favorite part of being part of that hardcore metal scene in New York in the 90s? Is there something that sticks out in your mind that was just, you know, I guess the best way to put it is, it would only happen in this time, in this place?
Well, yeah, that I feel like, all of it, like everything only happened because of the time and the place, because it was really a magical time and place. And it feels pretty good at the time, but you don't really, have the benefit of perspective to see, like, wow, like, this shit is ridiculous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole experience, like, what I think about is just like at the formation, it's like that. It's just like everything else. Like, people want to belong to something and to feel a sense of community. And if you're not, you know, I liked regular stuff too. Like, yo, I like video games. I like this. I like that. But at my core, there was still something where it's like, you know, you go see these bands like in the New York hardcore scene and go to CBGBs and stuff like this. And you just go to see Sick of It All. And you're like, holy fuck, man, like this, like more of this. And the fact that I went to it, and I don't know anybody, and like nobody beat the fuck out of me or whatever, even though everyone looks hella dangerous. Like, okay, like maybe this is a good thing. Maybe I'll come back next time. You know what I mean? And just that sense of feeling like you're part of something underground, you're part of something dangerous, and you are, but you're also part of this community. And like, you suddenly have a place where it's like, oh, it's cool to think the way I think and to look the way I look or to act the way I act. Like, it does, like, fuck what people think. Like, you could learn a lot from music and a music scene if you have the benefit of being a part of a good one. You know what I mean?
Do you think that part of the reason that movement happened at that particular point was the fact that grunge had become so commercialized that this was now the next underground movement of angst building up, because you kind of went from punk to grunge to hardcore metal, maybe with a little metal in between punk and grunge? Was that just kind of that sense of the next, you know, fuck this kind of attitude?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, it definitely makes sense, because you see the eras of music, how it goes from, you know, a Guns N' Roses defined industry sound into a Nirvana, you know, defined sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that same period, in that 95 and 96 era, as you know, the stuff from the early 90s all has seeded and, you know, grown and expanded, you suddenly hit into 1995 and 1996, and you have bands like Rancid, you know, in full swing. You have, even at that time, the Offspring, Bad Religion, hitting as like almost a triple threat. You know what I mean? Like, they were all over at the same time. And then you have all on the underneath side, you had the bands that have been building up for like a year, like Madball. You had the just emerging H2O. You know, younger bands like Shutdown and District 9 and just, you know what I'm saying? Like, so, and many, many more. So it's like, it's just the magical thing. But yeah, all the pieces kind of came together, you know what I mean? And you still had the gods, like the Sick of It Alls and stuff, doing their thing. And Agnostic Front went through their breakup and then was back. But yeah, I just feel fortunate to have been there and to be able to be part of that scene. And the idea that you could go to a show and then see it and then hang out with the band in a non-pretentious way. Mm-hmm. And then, like, one day you'll be somewhere and someone will come up to you and be like, hey, what's going on, man? And it's like someone from one of the bands you went and saw. Like, hey, you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, wow, that's like, you know what I mean? Like, I see a lot of parallels between it and the wrestling community, like what the, especially the independent scene wrestling community, where, you know, with like, say, working with a company like Game Changer, and you go to all these different cities and you see the fans that travel from city to city and like the reunions they have, and it's their like getaway weekend with each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? Combined with the local scene and communities that are all excited to have the show in, you know, whether it's Tennessee or LA or Las Vegas or New Jersey or wherever, you know what I mean? So it's kind of really cool. I love seeing that people are like kind of aware of others and involved with others, and it makes it all more special for everyone, you know, the performers and the audience both.
Most definitely, man. And you know, you had just mentioned Game Changer Wrestling, and obviously you're quite familiar to the audience that's tuning in that may be familiar with Game Changer. What do you think about their rise? And quite honestly, I think you even said it yourself on your Twitter that they helped to change the game for independent wrestling here in the States.
100%. I mean, I feel so lucky to be associated with Game Changer. And for me, it started with Joey Janela's Spring Break. The original Spring Break was the first time I got to work with those guys. I was already aware of them and what they were doing and stuff they were doing in previous incarnations and things like that. But the second I heard about Joey Janela's Spring Break, to me, it was like a Grand Slam home run. And, you know, now you realize in history, there was a lot of people, whoever, industry insiders or competitors or whatever, who felt like, oh, these guys are going to shoot themselves in the foot. Like, this is never going to go over. And it reignited like a wrestling revolution. You know what I mean? That's still burning. Like, think of how many guys got contracts.
Oh, yeah.
Off of Game Changer. And how many people Game Changers entertained, how many pay-per-views and how many Blu-rays and new territories. Like, it's mind-blowing to me because I have the pleasure of working with a lot of great independent companies, like here in California, West Coast Pro Wrestling and the Underground Wrestling Alliance, All Pro Wrestling. But no one really does it like Game Changer does. Like I said, running literally the world is their territory. Like we did two runs to Japan in a 6-month period between the second half of 2019 and the first part of 2020, and we would have been back there. We would have been back there in about 2 months, but obviously now that's all out the window. And so was the UK show that we had announced, and the Mexico debut at the Junkyard, which we had announced for May.
Yeah,
the Washington DC debut.
Yep.
So all those are now, you know what I'm saying?
Hell, even the there was the Vegas debut.
Yes.
That I personally had bought tickets for. I was pretty amped for it, and you know, obviously, you know, with the way that the world is right now, it's unfortunate that's happened. But yeah, I mean, you just got to figure that you know, Game Changer will make a trip back to Vegas at some point.
Oh, a million percent. And I think just as cities open up and as the, you know, it kind of becomes defined, like when are people ready to go see events? When is it safe for there to be events? When do the different cities allow for there to be events? I think, you know, those are all just key indicators to watch, because it seems like some cities and states seem like they're about to roll out event type stuff like immediate, like on Monday, from some of the recent reports I've been seeing. So, and you know, we've all seen, I don't know if you guys are aware, but there was a like a drive-in wrestling show yesterday in San Diego.
Yep. Dirty Ron.
Yeah, yep. Dirty Ron McDonald and the Fist Combat guys. They love to get fisted over a Fist Combat, from what I understand. that's their gimmick. But and also I know there's like a show advertised for Oklahoma coming up. I've seen some Tennessee independents advertising dates in May. So it'll be interesting to see what is the outcome of all that and how those events are received and how these new safety standards, you know, whatever they are. And that's the thing. I guess it varies by state. So I think all dates will be honored just as soon as it's possible and permissible.
I think what Steve's getting at is, Kevin, where's his refund?
Well, I think the Vegas ones have been refunded, right?
Yeah. Vegas has already been refunded.
Yeah, I'm just ribbing you, bro.
I know. I got to make sure though. Customer service is job one.
You know, you brought up Fist. One of the things they did last night is a couple of the wrestlers had a pretty brutal match where it was basically in honor of Supreme passing away. And, you know, there was a heavy flow of blood. Do you think that we've gotten away from commissions overseeing wrestling with the virus?
In some states.
In some states, yeah, of course. But that leads to my question. With the virus coming in such an aggressive form, is there a chance we're about to see athletic commissions start to pry their heads back into pro wrestling?
Well, that's the thing. Again, a very great question. And, you know, I won't name names in this instance because, you know, as not to promote it, because I don't necessarily think it's a good thing for wrestling. But I know of at least one promoter that is among the, you know, first people back running shows, and their advertised date is like a multi-night deathmatch tournament or something like that. And that seems like a really bad idea. You know what I mean? Now, on the flip side, I'm not a doctor or whatever. I don't know anything about, and I don't know if there's been any study, or I've never seen anything about, you know, what is the correlation? You know, does the coronavirus transmit through the blood and whatever? You would think it does. If it's in your spit, it's in your blood, right? Mm-hmm. But I have no fucking idea. So I don't honestly know. I mean, wrestlers are so close to each other as it is, like as far as not touching your face and not breathing on someone, or that then you can't, that's wrestling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's a tough one. Like it's just really what the market will bear and what's allowed. Overall, the cautious side in me feels like, and not speaking about Dirty Ron or any wrestling company in particular, but as a nation, I worry that rushing back to do stuff too soon only sets us up to have this massive second wave.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Kind of based out of maybe ignorance, maybe greed, or maybe just a restlessness. Like, hey, I'm tired of this or whatever. And on the flip side, though, maybe this will work. And that's what you have to do, is slowly just start doing stuff again. So it's like, I you know what I mean? I can cast no judgment on that, because to me, it's unknown. I feel like I just don't know. It's very tough. You know what I mean? Because I definitely hear both sides on a regular basis.
I really hope that what doesn't happen is that this is an excuse. The virus is used as an excuse.
Correct.
To then, you know, oversight where they shouldn't even fucking be oversighting. You know,
well, think about it. This is what happens. Someone's going to find out that there's, let's say, a show that has like seems like a bad idea to be happening, and then people start contacting whoever, the media or local authorities, like, what's going on with this? And then either the venue says we don't want to do it, or the local authorities say you can't do it, or the local authorities find out, what do you mean we can't stop this from happening? Why? Oh, we don't have an athletic commission. Well, let's change that for it's a public safety issue. You know what I mean? Like, you never know. It seems like a good time to be cautious. You know what I mean? But again, then wrestling has never been about being cautious. Yeah. So yeah, it is. It is very much a paradox. Like, for me, I feel like the jury's still out and I'm waiting on more facts.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what someone like Dirty Ron is doing is brilliant, because he's taking the current events and the parameters that are in place and finding a way to make magic within those parameters. He's not just having a regular event.
Yep, exactly.
So to him, I say kudos. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Without a doubt, man. Yeah, it's all about adapting to, you know, to what standards are being adopted, and everything with our world today. You know, it's no different than things that have been that we've seen in the past, but we've not seen them to this degree in the past.
Correct.
So I think that we just need to use some common sense, and, you know, just gauge things and not open up full scale, you know, wide open. But like what you were saying, you know, just test the waters a little bit, see how things go.
Except for,
that was a really good point.
Except for strip clubs. Let's open those back up, man.
Strip clubs and gyms and nail salons immediately.
Yeah.
Now, you have to admit, it does sound crazy when Georgia is like, hey, we're going to open back up, and right off the bat, nail salons, barbershops, and bowling alleys are open. And it's like, really? Like, those specific things? Even the bowl, you couldn't just leave the bowling alley with all the shoe contact and everyone's handling everything? You know what I'm saying? Is there anything more coronavirus friendly than bowling?
Well, I think sticking your fingers in three holes, you know,
warm, dark, bacteria filled holes.
Right, that everyone passes along.
On common law shoes.
Right. It sounds like my prom relived all over again.
Oh my god. But you speak of that, right? It's crazy, because when this was all starting, or I shouldn't say starting, but at least earlier in the coronavirus timeline, like at the, it's funny now because I'll see the orange man on TV will say, like, oh, I didn't even know anything about the coronavirus until like late January. But meanwhile, I was going to do a Game Changer Wrestling tour in Japan at the end of January. And all the wrestlers, everybody had been following this coronavirus story, because we're like, wow, there's this virus happening in China, and China's by Japan, and da 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 da. So, like, it's just funny to think about that, according to public statements, we were somehow tracking the coronavirus story before it was an issue for anyone in the public health sector. You know what I mean?
One more reason that people involved in the wrestling industry are on top of everything, man.
Right, because it affects them.
Yep.
You know, I was worried, like, what are we going to be allowed to fly to Japan? And then as soon as we got there, everything was going great. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, every day I would wait to see on the news, like, oh, they're going to say no more flights back.
Right,
like,
I mean,
no more flights.
Tessa's still in Mexico right now.
Is she?
Yeah, apparently so. She hasn't been able to get out because of that. You know, when she was down in Mexico, apparently that's when the border shutdown was put into place, and so there's been a hard time. Allegedly, now this is all secondhand that I'm hearing it, but you know, it's just amazing that you could get stuck.
Right, and now you've seen, like, in WWE, there's a bunch of British-based wrestlers that in some cases are involved in championship pictures, you know, and they're stuck in England or, you know, the UK or wherever. They can't come over here. That's wild.
Yeah, yeah, and look, Thatcher's been doing an amazing job. You know, it's...
He's the greatest, man. He's always been one of the greatest, and I love that he's getting to shine and be on TV every week, and He's pure. He is professional wrestling. Timothy Thatcher is pro wrestling.
Without question, man. So that bears to ask. So obviously with the coronavirus and everything as it is, how have you been keeping yourself busy?
Well, I've been doing some interviews every week for WrestleBuds. That's Buds with a Z over on Instagram. We go live on there several days a week, and I've done some pretty notable interviews so far, if I could toot my own horn. In the last week, I think I've had Vampiro, Rob Van Dam, Zicky Dice, and I'm forgetting Jimmy Lloyd. How's that for a nice round table of talent?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, but what, though? That it's funny you mentioned that, because the first three guys are some of our favorite people that we've ever talked to. You know, they're just great people to talk with.
Absolutely. Yeah, Vampiro is one of my favorite people to interview and to conversate with. So it was great to have him on. And then on May 31st, I'm going to be hosting the Superhuman TV show along with my good close friend, Joey Janela. And that's going to be live on YouTube, and it's going to blow your fucking mind. Whatever people are expecting, they're not ready for what's going down on Superhuman TV on YouTube May 31st. So I encourage everyone to see that. And of course, the Kevin Gill Show podcast. I haven't put one out lately, but there's over 150 episodes all recorded in person with all sorts of legends and icons of music and wrestling, and a couple of video game episodes too.
Definitely, man. And, you know, you mentioned the Kevin Gill Show. I mean, that's an amazing podcast, man. I've definitely got to hand it to you. You do amazing work with that. So kudos, and just keep that up, man. It makes for a great listen. And guys, if you have not had a chance to check that out, make sure that you, after this podcast, that you go check out the Kevin Gill Show. Speaking of that, man, internet radio podcasting, it's gone through a bit of a boom period. Content creators, they've had to adapt again. They're just like any other kind of creators, to stay relevant, you know, to existing fan bases while getting new audiences. What do you think about the ever-changing landscape of digital media right now?
It's wild. Like you said, it's ever-changing, and there's always people that are hungrier, that are maybe a little bit leaner in their production, in terms of they can get from shot to net that much faster. You know what I mean? And there's also people that are able to base everything off how something looks rather than the content of how something sounds or an idea behind something. So sometimes it's like a different thing. Like sometimes I'll be talking to someone in the entertainment business, and they'll be like, oh, well, it's not like I can just post a picture of myself with no pants on and get a bunch of likes on my Instagram. You know what I mean? And for some people, they can do that. For some people, they either can't or they don't want to or whatever. So it's very interesting, because within the kind of cosmetic instant satisfaction of like, oh, this person is cosmetically appealing, or the colors in this photograph of a river look beautiful, or this person's doing interviews, this person's doing live broadcasts. Like, there's so many layers of what people can do with the platforms. And like, I sometimes feel like I like to do long form interviews and have these conversations that people can enjoy. And I go the extra yard that they're all recorded in person, which puts me in an unusual quandary during these times. But then on the same side, people love to watch a 10 or 15 second clip of something, usually someone beautiful dancing or doing something, you know what I mean? But it's like, how do you, that can be a conundrum sometimes, which is like, well, how do you compete with that in a sense? And it's different audiences and different times and different moments, but it's something to always think about. There's always something like, how do you occupy that space, or what can you do? How can you take note of what it is that people are gravitating towards, and how can you make it work for you, even if you don't seem predisposed to fitting into that slot, you know?
Yeah,
that would be kind of my statement. But it's interesting, because it's ever evolving, and it's great to see people also stepping up the game on their production. Everybody's got their ring light and their setups, but it makes their green screens in a lot of cases, and you've seen what guys like Danhausen and Warhorse and Effie and Cole Cabana and Joey Ryan and all these people are able to do. It's intimidating to me, because like, I wish I did more, but I'm sometimes like almost intimidated to like put myself in stuff too much. That's why I love doing audio interviews. You know what I mean? Because I could just interview people like, but because I always think like, well, if you're in charge of something and you're always in it, it's kind of weak. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep.
But at the same time, everybody's in charge of their own brand these days. And of course, everybody's in their own stuff. So sometimes I think I just have old school ideas that I have to like slowly move forward with the times in certain components. You know what I mean?
But I think that,
and that's what's cool too, then, is where then all of a sudden now I'm doing these on camera interviews on WrestleBuds a couple times a week, and it's totally cool and I like it and it's so easy and it's fun. So I would have never, that's something that's been on my like stuff I want to do, but I always feel like, I don't want to call people up and be like, yo, can you come on the video thing with me? It feels intrusive to people, but everybody wanted to do it and it's just done. So, you know what I mean? Like, so that's a really good thing for me that now I'm doing that. And it kind of all came from everything going on in the world, you know?
Do you think that's one of the things that in terms of looking at, let's say, the music scene in New York in the early to mid 90s, if we would have had what we, you know, have now back then, would that have propelled, you know, certain bands and people just maybe just even by image, or would it also have hindered certain bands who basically were really good at just that, like you said, that interpersonal feeling? You know, it just seems like we're in that weird phase where everyone can be connected now today, but at the same time, everyone is so judgmental on everyone else. It's
Well, yeah, no, I mean, you said it, man. You guys come with the very thoughtful insight and questions, because you're just hitting the nail on the head every time. And yeah, the world is literally so, so critical of everything that it's hard. I think it's hard. It makes it hard on the performers. It makes it hard on the people that spend all their time and money to put together events so that performers can come to people's towns or go to different towns and put on pay-per-views that everyone can watch and deal with all the stress and everything that comes with it. I myself never understood, like when I was a real little kid and going to my first wrestling shows, and I would be online to go into the show, and you'd hear people around you online, yeah, this guy sucks and that guy sucks, the whole show sucks. It's not like it used to be. It's not like it used to be. This is garbage. I don't want to hear any of that. Like, I'm here to like it. I like it, and that's it. Like, I'm not interested in you hating what you're supposed to love doesn't make you, like, insightful or smart or witty or like, oh, he's a rebel. It's just like what you like, but you don't have to ruin what you don't like for everyone else. And what you don't like really has no bearing on anything.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't like olives. You know what I mean? I don't eat them. I don't want them around. But I don't pretend that the olive industry isn't like a zillion-dollar industry. And before all this, it's not like they didn't install a giant olive bar in the stupid Whole Foods by my house. And they did that and got rid of the burrito bar, which is ridiculous. Like, really? You got an olive bar instead of a burrito bar? Are you high?
But, well, you know what, though? Now that
or as Mike Muir from Suicidal Tendencies said, just because you don't like it, don't mean it ain't no good.
Yeah.
Facts.
Well,
straight facts.
I just love the fact that when you said that, I just get this image of you standing in front of the olive bar, like shouting at it, you suck! You suck! You know, I pit it? I'll show you pit it! You boo! You know, it's just like that's the absurdity of, like, you know, that idea of what we, the freedoms we have to do as an audience to professional performers who deal with that, and you express your opinions because you, of course, are an expert when you walk into an arena. Yeah. But if
this ease of access,
yeah,
very few people use it in a beneficial or a positive way. Like, I used to write letters to people, like, and you would have to sit down and write or type a letter, find out where the person worked or where their mail address was so you could send it to them. You'd go put it in the mailbox, wait for something to come back. They'd send you back a picture or whatever. And then going into doing mail order and all that stuff, to me, it's all about tangible goods and physical objects. You know what I mean? Like, yep. And if you can get that connection with someone and you can put that time into making the contact, like, that can, magic can ensue from that. If you just inbox someone to be like, you suck, drink my tears, libtard snowflake or whatever. Oh, Kevin, you're a terrible person because you care about other people's, like, basic human rights. Like, oh, I know, I'm so horrible. But it's just so weird. Like, the only person I ever wrote a hate letter to was the honky tonk man back in the day when he was asking for the vote of confidence.
Yeah.
Yep.
He did not. Needless to say, honky tonk man did not get my vote.
That's awesome, man. Now, so obviously, Kevin, we've had a chance to talk about, you know, the things that have brought you into the spotlight. But I've got to ask this question. What would be something that our listeners that are familiar with you would be surprised to know about Kevin Gill?
Let's see. The first thing that comes to mind is that I'm quite an avid Judge Judy fan. I've watched like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes of Judge Judy, and I have a personalized autographed 8x10 of Judge Judy hanging in my home. That's kind of interesting, right?
Yeah, you definitely didn't disappoint with that one.
More exciting than I really like cooking, you know what I mean?
Oh, man. Along those same lines, you know, you have a reputation for finding all this good music that is either, you know, metal or hip hop or alternative or grunge or whatever, you know, whatever, punk. What is the song that gets you every single time you hear it that would make you look in the eyes of, you know, the tough masculinity crowd as, what a pussy.
Oh, I can say, Come on, Eileen by Dexy's Midnight Runners. I could say Jesse's Girl by Rich Springfield. I could say anything from Blink 182's Enema of the State. What else? That's a pretty good array.
Yeah. You know, and that, I think that you need to do a photo shoot like the Dexy, the video for Come On, Eileen, in the overalls. With no shirt and the scarf.
Wow. I could own it because, you know, no one else is doing that, right?
Right, now. Exactly.
Exactly.
That could be all mine.
Now, so obviously, you know, you're like what Michaels had mentioned, you know, you've got a penchant for knowing this great music. What are you listening to right now, music wise?
Oh, man, you're going to get, when you ask very direct questions like that, you're going to get very direct answers, but they may sound weird. Lately, I've been listening to tons of Suicidal Tendencies, like the old Suicidal Tendencies, like Join the Army primarily. Yeah.
Okay.
With a little bit of How Will I Laugh Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of Beastie Boys stuff from, like, say, like the first probably 15 years or so.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
and right, and a lot of Sick of It All, a lot of Rancid, and right before that, I was listening to Madball, the Drop of Many Suckers record, like five times a day. I don't know why, but like I've been on like a streamline. Oh, and I've been listening, believe it or not, to a lot of Ice-T instrumentals. Not that there's anything wrong with the Ice-T vocals, but I've been listening to Ice-T instrumentals. It's just fucking, it's hard. You know what I mean? Like, and it's hard, and in some cases it's sparse, and it just leaves a lot of room to think and just to vibe.
You know, speaking of that kind of feel of, you know, thinking and vibing, we've had
Go ahead. If I may, I left that one vital thing I've listened to a ton during this whole quarantine thing that I never listened to before in my life is NoFX.
Oh yeah. That's
and I got into them strictly from watching. I had met Fat Mike a couple of times and he's mad cool, but I never really heard the band besides, you know, I knew a few of the hits or whatever.
Yeah.
But I started watching these full length concerts of them on YouTube, of them playing at like festivals.
Yep.
And just their full sets. And it's like, these guys are fucking geniuses, like absolute geniuses. And they deliver like a live album quality sound.
Oh yeah.
Like every time they fucking play, like they're literally just on some other level. And then of course I've been like tag teaming that, followed by like a Rancid show from somewhere. You know what I mean? And like, also the Interrupters.
Live
stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, NoFX is one of my favorite live bands. I've seen them, I think, 5 or 6 times.
Wow.
And it's just, you know, every single time, it's just such a fun vibe. You know, the crowd is never hostile. Everyone there is just there because they're fans. And, you know, the mosh pits are, you know, they're aggressive, but they're safe. And it's just so much fun, man. With that, with aggression, with that feeling, I mean, we've been, as a nation, pent up, as a world, pent up. Do you think that, because I, you know, here I am in my mid-40s, and I feel, at this point in my life, I've never been more pissed off at everything. Every little thing just pisses me off. I'm just.
Well, at least you're finally admitting that, Michael.
Oh no, I have no bones about it. But it's funny because that aggression is usually on reserve for people from the ages of 15 to 25, and I just wonder if we're going to see a new renaissance of hardcore punk metal, even hardcore wrestling in some extent, if the government does get involved in sport commissions.
Sure.
That, you know, all this extra aggravation and aggression and stuff is now spanning from 15 years old to 55 years old, where people, I think you're going to find people emerging with a new outlook of rage and desperation.
And needing an outlet and needing a place to belong and how to fit in again. And think of it, like, I'm lucky, like I'm here, you know, in quarantine or whatever you want to call it, stay at home orders, but I'm with my girl at least, so I'm not alone. Like, but imagine there's a lot of people that are alone, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or whatever, or maybe don't have the best situation with the people they live with or whatever. And that's got to suck, because you can't even all the most basic things that you would want to do or could just do in the past, you can't do.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know it's different everywhere, and obviously the Vegas Bad Boys of podcasting get heard everywhere, but I'm only speaking about San Francisco, which is still pretty, like, whole lot of nothing, you know what I'm saying? Like, literally nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, go to the post office to mail a package, go pick up stuff at the grocery store. Like, that's the scene for, like, 2 months now.
Well, you know, it's because we just opened up some bars and, you know, restaurants are doing the seating here. And one of the things that I realized, I went into a bar for, I was doing food delivery and had to pick up the food. And so I was waiting there for a good 10, 15, 20 minutes. And I'm looking at all these people. And first of all, the place is almost packed. And second of all, the girls were looking fine. The guys were looking fine. I got a feeling that if you want to get laid right now, as soon as these places open.
So much pent up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a lot. I get the Orange Man on TV talks a lot about pent up demand, but there's really only pent up demand for one thing.
Yep.
And it's not economic stimulus. It's more like genital related stimulus. Straight up.
Yeah, it just so it, true. It's just it's you know, it's such a fascinating time that we're living through and getting to see all this and everything that you've seen. Is there one thing that sticks out in your mind out of all the experiences you've had that you go, you know what? It was pretty fucked up, but I would never trade that.
There's a lot. I've been fortunate to have a lot of cool experiences, man. Like from, you know, when the Juggalos went through this whole thing with being tagged as a gang and stuff, and I got to host a rally at the Lincoln Memorial.
Yep.
And give like a keynote speech at it.
Yeah.
That was shown on like CNN and stuff. Like,
yep.
That I never thought that would ever happen. You know, I never thought I would be a referee in an angle with Roddy Piper and have Roddy Piper walking me through everything and being like my buddy and slapping me on the back and giving me advice and stuff. Like, I never thought I would work with guys like Rikishi Fatu and Vampiro. And there's so many like little moments that you have where you're just like, man, I can't even believe this is real. Like, one thing that's not, oh, another thing was, what did I watch the other day? It was one of those on YouTube page. I don't know if it was not BuzzFeed. It's one of those UK web content companies, and they do wrestling stories or whatever.
Wrestle Talk, maybe?
Yeah, I think it might be them. But they did one about people's last matches or something like that. And then they had Roddy Piper's last match in it, and it was actually a match I did commentary on. And I had no idea until just the other day when I saw it, that I had actually got to do commentary on Roddy Piper's last match.
Wow.
Things like that obviously are crazy. Get into like, I was on tour with Sick of It All in Europe one time, and they had me, or more than one time, they had me come out and introduce them to the live audience, like do their live intro, like a pro wrestling style intro. Shit like that to me is crazy. Getting to do commentary with ICP. And that's not even getting into the video game stuff and the record stuff and getting to go to Europe the first time. So, yeah, like just, yeah, I would say that I wouldn't trade it. Sometimes I think, man, if I was just putting out, like, dance records, I did put out dance records, but in a different way. If I put out electronic dance records instead of organic, angry dance records, I probably would have made a lot more bread, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yep.
But you know what I'm saying? I did what I loved, and I still do. So, and I'm still I still have some of the vintage records I put out back in the day. I've been reissuing. You can check those out at dignifiedbastard.com. It has all the SFT Striving for Togetherness stuff on there. And I'm working on a Shutdown reissue right now for their 1995 classic, Turning the Tide, or it might be 1996 classic. But either way, same time period. Nice. It is 1996. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when that album came out, but you know, that's.
And that was just like Brooklyn Straight Edge with like a 16-year-old lead singer. I'm like, man, this just feels right.
Yeah.
This is Positive Youth Crew hardcore. And, you know, I always remember a funny, I would, when I first signed Shutdown and whatever, I would try to, if I got hooked up with stuff, I would always try to pass it on to the bands, meaning, if I get, oh, hey, Kevin, do you want to come to this event? And I'd say, oh, can I get a few extra names? And then I would say, hey, Mark from Shutdown, come to this concert or come to this industry party or whatever, you know, so we could get out there and stuff. And Mark's the singer, super straight edge, super young. And I always remember asking him, like, he'd be looking at me all because I'm all goofy and drunk. And I'd be like, so what's up, Mark? You're going to just be straight edge for your whole life? he's like, of course, you know what I mean? And I'm like, I don't know why, but I always remember this. I think it was like at a CBGB's gallery party. And then I was like, what are you going to do, Mark? You're going to get married. And when you have to toast to your bride, you're going to drink soda. And it's, I don't know why, but that story is always just right in the back of my mind for some reason. Like me being a drunk jerk to my friend. But it was good, Nate. It wasn't like, you know what I'm saying, like some hate-filled attack. It was more just like through my cynical drunken eye.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that I relate because I was the one who would encourage certain people in college. I always skipped my classes, and I would, you know, especially springtime, I'd look at certain, you know, guys that were very much, you know, straight and narrow, you know, I got to go to class, and I'd be like, hey, man, look at all the ass that's out on campus right now. You telling me you're going to go to class? Let's go. We're going to smoke, have a joint. Let's go look at the girls, you know, and, but that's it, man. It's always fun to kind of prod and be like, and then when someone does accept it, and then it's like, yeah, I guess I just corrupted this person, but that's all right, man. It's all cool.
As long as they're consenting and they
exactly.
enjoy it.
Exactly.
The consenting is the key part.
Is the key part. Exactly. Well, at this point, we're going to have to consent to let you go for now. We'll definitely catch up with you at another time, Kevin. Really quick, if you can put out your social media for everyone who can follow you.
For sure, man. And again, I appreciate the time, and I'm back to come. I'm down to come back anytime, even if it's in shorter bites, because once you get me going, it's hard to stop. But I do work well in a compartmentalized experiment as well. But
awesome.
You can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at OG Kevin Gill. And I think it's the same on Facebook, but you can find me on Facebook also. The Kevin Gill Show is a place you can hear all my audio interview series with everyone from Luke Gallows to Matthew Riddle to the Young Bucks to Mick Foley to it's crazy who's on my show. Like when I look at it sometimes, plus Sick of It All, plus Agnostic Front, plus the Cro-Mags, plus Killswitch Engage, plus VOD. It goes on and on, and a lot of great guests, Shane Helms, Rocky Romero. It's just really great. So I encourage everyone to please check that out. It's free. It's everywhere. I'm on WrestleBuds all the time at WrestleBuds on Instagram. And send me a shout out, man. Check me out. Check out my merch store, dignifiedbastard.com. And that's where you shout out to J.Ru the Damager. And you can check out records I reissue and merch for me and my show and all that there. And I appreciate everyone who supports pro wrestling. And if you're a fan of wrestling, like I know you are, you can get a free multi-day trial at independentwrestling.tv when you use the code Kevin Gill, G-I-L-L. And that's how it's going down.
Awesome.
And of course, Game Changer Wrestling, man. We will be back. Shit will be schooled. And I look forward to seeing all of y'all on May 31st in that digital audience for the Superhuman TV show.
Oh, I'll be there.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Kevin Gill, thank you very much. And, you know, keep up the good work, brother. And everyone, please check him out if you haven't. And definitely look up some of the albums, man. And if you guys have never listened to aggressive rock and roll, check it out, because for some of us, it's our life bloodline. So
absolutely. It's our sanity inducer. It's our calmer. It's our everything.
Facts.
It's the soundtrack to our lives.
Awesome. All right. We'll be talking to Kevin in the future. And thanks once again.
See you down
again,
the road,
brother.
Guys. Thank you so much.
All right, man. Boys of Podcasting.